here at 7:37 and we arrived at 7:25, so it was perfect. And we got to welcome you with the kirtan.
It was great to see you again, Maharaj. You're a big part of our family, a big part of our show, and we look up to you and love having you in our life.
Yes, it was a wonderful homecoming. When we came down this alley, we already heard in the back the tiger of the kirtan roaring. And as we drove closer, we saw you on Medanga. This is the first for me.
So you're not missing anything.
Yes, everyone, I'm very happy to be with all of you because any sangha, that is any association with spiritually minded people, has always one result. We move forward, we get hints in that association, what could be the next level for us and how we could obtain it. So I hope it's a dynamic sangha today with many inspiring insights for all of us, and looking forward to start. Actually, I thought I could ask you, Raghunath, about your book From Punk to Monk. It rhymes. I did read a few of the chapters and was very impressed by, let us say, that lively, connected to real life presentation. I think behind every spiritual path there is also a human story. That is, how does the one who is on the path apply the teachings, struggle with the teachings, hopefully digest them at the end, and so on. And I found a lot of that connection of the spiritual ideals to a human being who is trying to cut his path through the jungle of uncertainties. What was in your mind when you wrote the book?
I really wanted to talk about Maharaj's book, but he's also a very prolific author. He's an international teacher, has students all over the world, and is a very deep spiritualist, a monk for the last 40 plus years. As far as my book goes, I didn't really want to write it, but the publisher, I wanted to write like a self-help book teaching spiritual philosophy made simple, but they encouraged me to write my story. And it was a little difficult. If you knew me during the time, it was written like sort of in patchwork, because I'm good at telling little stories, but it's hard for me to create an entire arc of my life, and I'm very distracted, and I do a lot of things on a regular basis, so it's hard to find writing time. So it took about 4 years to put together, and basically I basically threaded different little stories together that have sort of a beginning, a middle, and an end. And I like to look back at my life as little stories that have a beginning, middle, and end, and a lesson. And it's in those lessons that I feel like I can sort of grow. And I think, as you were saying, like, whenever you read a spiritual book about someone's journey and how they digest spiritual information and assimilate it, I don't expect anybody to live my life or even take make the same choices I did. But generally, as different as we are, we're all very similar in a lot of ways as well. We all go through love, heartbreak, gain, loss, birth, death, disease. We're all experiencing these things, and we can relate to even sometimes our greatest enemy, because they're going through the same things as well. And so we find a lot of common core things for a person on their spiritual quest, and how to apply some type of truth to help your car stay on the road, so to speak. So my goal was to help people see themselves through my quest, and the writing process was sort of excruciatingly painful. But I'm very glad. And when I finally said, oh, it's done, the publisher cut out like 200 plus pages because they're like, well, it doesn't help the arc. And I just had to sort of surrender. And I was like, but that's such a good story. And they were relentless in a wonderful way. But can you tell us about the book you're working on now?
Yes, I'm writing about a meditational journey. It's not just a book on how to meditate, but on how to make a journey. And it's also about an arc. It is starting with, it has three sections. One is turn within. The second section has to do with finding the true self. And the third section is all about connecting with the divine. My whole idea is, I think we have stopped to be human beings. Instead, most of us are human doings, or human thinkings, or human dressings, or human tattooings. But where's the being? The being and resting in your true self, the authenticity, it's all about, yeah, having, doing, thinking, but not about being yourself. And I think that road which we have mistakenly taken to the outside world needs to lead us into the inside world, to the true self. And to that end, I offer a journey which tries to accomplish that. So I expect everyone who reads my book to become a self-realized and blissful human being.
Oh, good. It almost sounds like a course would be, you go hand in hand with a workbook.
Yes, yes. It's a journey starts on one part, when you step out of the door, and then there are many things which happen until you reach your end, and how to deal with these things which happen, and so on is done. And the meditational part, which will be there, is just meant to internalize the teachings and anchor them within you, because there's so much theoretical knowledge. We have heard all so much of this self-help hack, I think you say in English language.
Hack, yeah, we're really into hacks. Any shortcut we can take.
Yeah, yeah. But this is all not so real, you know. You have to... The only knowledge which is worked for is possessed knowledge, or obtained or owned knowledge. But just all these small things which teachers throw at you, including myself, I have also done this a lot, is not so helpful as, you know, giving people a meditation, a journey, something to do to arrive at the conclusion. So I worked on it 5 years, Raghunath. It's my shortest book which I've ever written in my life, but it's 5 years. And if you ask me, when will Satchinandan Swami give birth to the book? When does it come out of the womb? I would say, by now, it's just now coming, but exactly when that just now is has to be decided by someone else than me.
Wow. Anyway, that sounds beautiful. You know, something came up with me, so maybe I'll start off these questions. When talking about adopting a spiritual culture, and you know, I always consider myself very unique and very sort of nonconformist in a lot of ways, especially as a teenager. How do we overcome the fear of losing personal identity by getting into a spiritual tradition? Does that question make sense? Because we want to keep our uniqueness about it. We don't want to be cookie cutter. But it seems like if I join a church, an institution, an ashram, it's like, where's my individuality go? And how much room is there for individuality? Like in the army, you need soldiers. You don't need a guy to just go off and do his own thing. You need people who are going to fall into rank and file for the greater good of some things. But it seems like it could crush a person's free spirit. What would you say to that?
I have seen that a lot. When a person comes into a spiritual movement or a spiritual lineage or a tradition, there are so many things which he adopts. Perhaps a new style of hair, a dress, eating habits, this is okay, this is not okay. Then rules for the spiritual technique, you know, sit down, do this, do that, and so on. And instead of going the path of self-realization, he could go the path of self-estrangement by doing all these things which are not really anchored in his thing. I know in my generation, to be part of the group I wanted to be part of, I had to get these bell button trousers.
do you know what they are? Like those. They're back now, I think.
Yeah, but I was I liked very much dancing and jumping over fences, and I would always be caught with them when I had these bell button trousers. They were not suitable to my lifestyle. For me, it would have been better to have these trousers which close at the ankle, so that I don't get don't get hung up anywhere. But no, to be a music lover, to be a follower of the Rolling Stones, and to appreciate the Doors and Jim Morrison and all, bell button trousers was a must. I would be looked upon with angry eyes when I appeared in that other style of pants. So the same thing could happen when you go into a spiritual tradition, that you can adopt things which are not favorable to you. And I have a quote. This is the only quote which I have today. I don't know, it was either Mark Twain or Ralph Waldo Emerson, both of them from your country, who said, "To be yourself in a world that is constantly trying to make you something else is the greatest accomplishment." So yes, it could happen that on the spiritual path, also you are made into something else than yourself. And I think this is a wrong understanding of self-realization. It is self-estrangement.
I like that. Thank you. I get it too. And I get that part of the spiritual practice is actually a distinguishing from what I thought was myself and my quote individuality, but was really just sort of my ego, just showing off in different ways to get attention and get validation and get people to think I'm cool. It's got nothing necessarily to do with self-realization. Yeah. It's just me on my own ego trip in a different way.
Yeah. Thank you. With your usual sharpness, you come to a very important point. Self-realization is not ego realization. That's very important to notice. The ego is the eternal mask maker, and always puts a persona on top of you that you are not. So, but it's also not following blindly at anything, you know. So you have to find the third way, really. It's not this, it's not that, but it's, I think it has to do with one verse from the Bhagavatam. There it is said, on a genuine spiritual path, there should be three realizations which happen. And by the three realizations, you could measure, is my path going all right? These realizations, and now it's good to pay full attention, away from the chip, potato chip bag in front of you. joking. it is like this. In Sanskrit it says, bhakti parishanu bhavo viraktiya anyatra, and so on. So you should feel some bhakti, some love in your heart. You should feel some experience of divinity. It shouldn't be a theory any longer. If you have not realized it, you need to apply the path to your individual needs. And you should see that you lose your obsessive hunger for material distractions, which are not really nourishing you. So these three things should happen as natural and as safely and surely and observably as these three things should happen when you eat. When you eat, you can see that you are eating something healthy by first of all a feeling of satisfaction. Ah, I'm eating. Then a feeling of nourishment. Oh, I'm getting good food here. I'm becoming now very satiated. And finally, you should have a feeling, I don't need to eat any longer. I'm finished. This is a good meal. It gives you satisfaction, nourishment, and you don't need to take anymore. So on the spiritual path also, your satisfaction is when there's love coming in your heart, bhakti. Then your nourishment is when you experience something about Krishna's presence and arrangements and directions in your life. And the third is you say, thank you, I am no longer attached to this particular activity that harms me. So that is self-realization, no? Not fitting into the crowd, not feeding your ego, but making genuine spiritual experiences with love in your heart, and something concrete that you experience, and then you can say, bus, finished, I don't need this any longer. I don't need to be the most beautiful man in town. I don't need
that's to. Regularly running through my mind. Thank you, Maharaj. Good answer. All right, we're going to go to our questions now, and we're doing questions from our live audience. It's all the people that are with us, so we got a short list, and we're going to start. We're going to dive into the deep water first and ask Bunky, a.k.a. Bhakta Justin, to come on down. Justin, he traveled with me throughout Europe and India and lived with me across America, and he assisted me, and he's like a good friend of our family and an inspiring part of our community. Justin, come on close. We're happy to have you here.
I'm going to give you the mic and you got to talk right into the mic.
Okay.
I'm going to give a little introduction. That was a little bit of an introduction. Just say a little bit more about yourself if you want.
Okay. Hare Krishna Maharaj.
Hi.
Hare Krishna, everybody. I'm Justin. Well, he calls me Bunky. You guys know me as Bunky. you want to talk about how I met you? Just like, okay.
Get to know you.
So I was kind of a crazy party kid, working at like bars in New York City, gay bars, and making lots of money. then the shutdown happened, the coronavirus happened, and I was kind of forced to just sit in my room, and I started meditating and kind of picking up old practices that I had learned, you know, various places. And Raghunath kind of came to mind because I had taken yoga with him a few years prior. And I looked him up and he was on Joe Rogan. So I watched the Joe Rogan podcast, and then I watched Wisdom of the Sages through that. And then slowly but surely, Wisdom of the Sages kind of like hooked me in, and I was indoctrinated into the cult of love. Before bhakti, I was a performer. Besides working in bars, I was a drag queen. I performed 3 or 4 nights a week. Very demanding, kind of overwhelming lifestyle, physically, mentally. And it's one of those things, like, it becomes an obsession. It really takes over if you want to be good. You really have to give your whole life to it. And is that enough of an intro?
That's a pretty good intro. I just want to say, he was also very good at it, too. Because if you don't know, I worked in a drag queen bar in the 80s. That's what we did back then. In the 80s, everything just sort of merged together. And it's like a whole performance if you're unfamiliar with it. And he's such a great singer, entertainer, dancer, and so where does this leave us with your question today?
Okay. All right. So, I also want to say, like, I went to school for acting and singing and dancing and all that, and drag was kind of like the culmination of all of it. It was a way of me performing but not having to go through the avenue of being a kind of regular actor. I didn't have to go to auditions. I didn't have to suck up to casting directors. I could just go and perform and do my own thing. It was great. So, my question is, I got into bhakti and I got very serious about my spiritual life. And I served Prabhuji Raghunath for a year. And after that year was over, I got kind of an opportunity. A casting director reached out to me from a television show and wanted me to audition. And I kind of got sucked back into that world, into the drag world. And I thought I was going to be better at it because I was sober now. And what ended up happening was I was very disappointed when I went back into that world. I had to talk to people sober and deal with people who were drunk in a sober way, which is very difficult for me. And I'm not good at small talk. So I was super uncomfortable because you have to be the center of attention and you're on all the time. Even when you're sitting in the corner doing nothing, you're on. So I didn't really pick it up very much, and I kind of feel like I'm in a holding pattern, like I don't know what to do. And I've been offered another opportunity where I'm going to be performing in Portland, Oregon at a queer arts festival, and I'm going to be there for 2 months, and there's two shows, 2 separate months, and it's a big deal. And I guess I'm a little conflicted, like I don't know if this is good for my bhakti. It's going to be a theatrical setting. It's not like a bar or a club. So there's that, you know. But I'm feeling like I don't know if this is harmful to my bhakti. But I also know, like, there's value in it. And I think that in my heart, I believe I can do it for Krishna. I believe that it can be done in a way that is suitable for serving Krishna. I don't know. I guess I'm asking for direction in a way. Mm-hmm. Is that clear?
Yeah, clear.
It's like a person who's an actor, a singer, an entertainer. It's hard to get that quote gig that pays you money in America.
you know, you're generally like pounding the pavements, and here he is, this golden opportunity.
Can I actually say one more thing?
Yeah, please.
The issue is that drag is inherently, even when you're not around drunk people, it's inherently highly sexualized, subversive, irreverent, and insulting. You know, and that's where its power and its value lies. You know. Okay, that's it.
Okay. I'm glad I'm gonna put that big pile on your lap, Maharaj.
Yeah.
Glad you're here, Maharaj.
First of all, I saw you in that very creative outfit and was totally impressed. I saw it's an art, but more than that, I really don't know. But now where you added a few adverbs to describe the art, but it is, I know more. Here is something which I highly recommend you to do, Justin, and it's something which I feel could help everyone of us to find their path in decisions like this one, where you don't know, should I take the opportunity or should I better refrain from the opportunity? I would say try it a little bit without selling your soul and see what happens with your consciousness, how you react and so on. And you might even in that trying phase when you try things have someone you trust who understands you and discuss it with him. And then it's easier to jump off the train when it's not yet rolling with full steam, or to continue and giving speed in it. I would very much like to give you an example. Where I live, Raghunath and Kostuba have been our guests. It's a small ashram at the banks of an idyllic lake. It is called Gorabhavan. You've also visited us one year when you traveled with the two. I don't know if I showed you, but from the garden gate, there is a little path which goes through the forest, which now looks like a jungle. I made this path, it's my own path, and the way I made it is I started to walk and see, oh, here it's not so good, here is a big tree, or here is a lot of undergrowth, so I go around it, and as I walked, a wonderful romantic path appeared, which is so beautiful that next time you come, I will show you my path. This path has appeared while I walked it. I could not know how to go. And some things in life are appearing while you walk. Some decisions you can't do. Now, let us say you say, oh, this art is too much for me to handle, and I'm now in a different mindset to do it. Now, if you say on this theoretical assumption, I don't do it, therefore, you might sit in your ashram and think, oh, this art is so tempting. This art is so great. And in your mind, you might be on 1,000 drag stages.
In his ashram, dreaming of drag.
It is said you are, as far as your experience is, where your mind is. Mm. So I think this has been put on your path by your karma, this particular art. I mean, you don't have to show private parts or something.
No.
Yeah. I mean, there's certain good. So then you go, then I would say go, and if there is a rocky terrain or a steep climb, you have a rope around your which is tied to a good practitioner of bhakti, and if something happens, then zoop, you fall, but not very far. You are dangling on the rope. You know, you're still connected. Mm-hmm. This is in my this is your decision sounds very colorful, but we are all put before decisions where we really don't know. Relationships, for instance, how can anyone know at the beginning of a relationship if that will be fulfilling and nourishing and mutually helpful? You have to walk a little and then see as the path appears before you. Then after some time it's very clear, very clear. And then you won't sit in your ashram performing on 1,000 stages in the mind.
Mm.
Okay.
Good answer. Good
Thank
answer.
You.
Thank you. Okay, we love you. Very good answer, Maharaj. Thank you.
Your paths appear when you walk them.
Yeah.
Not on your theoretical planning board.
Sure.
But have a
it's almost like the Bhagavad Gita set in trance. You give it one, you want to give it up, and then no, you got to go do your duty, but you got to do it in a Krishna conscious way. Okay, next question. Next question is by one of our favorites on this trip, Miss Claire. Come on down. Come on, Claire. Claire is a friend of mine, married to a good friend of mine, and she always takes care of me when I go visit them in San Diego and Mona, California, and a friend of my family's, and my kids, we stay at their house, and she's a great mom, she's a great wife, she's a great school teacher, and how are you doing? How's your trip?
Wonderful.
What's been going on? Tell us anything you want to share about you coming on the trip, your husband's an initiated devotee. You're into a lot of the lifestyle things of Krishna consciousness. You're clean living, you're athletic, you're into, you know, your clean diet. But were you a little hesitant to come to like a Hare Krishna ashram in Italy, or was it like, oh, this is cool?
This is cool.
Oh, good.
Yeah.
Yeah, and everyone loves you. It's
No, I there's lots of things that I love about Krishna conscious. It, besides the clean living, the serving others, living a positive life. I've always loved all of those things about it. So
perfect. Well, we're happy you're here. What's your question today? It's very deep and philosophical.
I think it's just a pretty basic one that there's probably, you know, that probably people struggle with all the time. I think Mark struggles with it himself, I'm sure, is finding, how do you find balance, especially because I'm a type A personality, finding balance in your life and not trying to always be perfect at everything and, you know, being down on yourself when you're not perfect in your spiritual life or your relationships or your practice.
Mm. Wow, this is very, well, who should answer? Both of us, perhaps? Or?
You.
yeah. See, I'm a post-war child. Our parents saw Europe disintegrating. You know, there was bombing going on. Germany was only rebels at the end. And my father was one of these people, survivors from the war, who wanted to build up Germany again. And therefore, you can imagine what type of values I heard when I was a child. You have to do things, you have to excel, you have to help us get the transport system okay. Architect would be a good job for you, and you need to do it good. You need to. I was really growing up in an achiever's mentality, and a perfectionist at that. Mm. That was my indoctrination, and when I came on the spiritual path, I was very unhappy when I could not rise early in the morning, when I slept. I was very unhappy when my when there were days where I was, as you say in America, under the clouds, you know, and could not do this nicely. When I gave lectures and I couldn't remember one verse, I would beat myself up afterwards, and so on and so forth. I know the tyranny of perfectionism and what it can do with you, because you're never good enough in your mind. Once you become a member of this idea, perfectionism. I want to tell you, Claire, where I'm now after 50 plus, Raghunath. I'm already an old man. I don't look like this, and I don't feel like this, but after 50 plus years on
this. I said 40 plus, forgive me, 50 plus.
No, it's all right. I have not even started. I want to tell you where I'm standing now. I believe in a loving God. Now, not a judgmental God. Someone who is like a parent who is happy about the broken language of his child. You know, he's speaking, he says something. It was only duddle-dee-doo, but he is speaking. You know. So I believe also now that in spiritual life, you need to try to give your best, whatever that is, but then let Krishna do the rest. It's not perfect. There is one saint, I don't know where I told this, in Braj, His Holiness Radhanath Maharaj also knows him well, who used to live on top of a sacred hill. So whenever he needed to follow nature's call, he felt he should go down the hill to pass urine and everything else there, to not put it on the head of the holy mountain, so to say. There was no canalization where things would go naturally down without touching the hill. So that was his feeling. So at that time, now there is canalizations and pipes where everything goes down. At that time, there used to be tigers in Vashana. To meet a tiger at night, I don't know if you ever did, but it's a scary thing. You sit there and do your nature's call, and the tiger is perhaps agitated because you have done this in his sleeping bed, you know. It's really not nice to be confronted with a ferocious tiger who might be angry in the night. So this personality, his name is Ramesh Baba, he was once asked how he is dealing with the tigers. And he showed a little stick and he said, "I have my stick." It was a small little stick. Then he was asked, "Baba, what will a stick do against tiger?" And he said, "No problem. I do my best, small, and the rest is done by Krishna." This is the type of spirituality which I find very good. I do my best, but without this crazy obsession, it must be perfect, but I give what I can do, and I think the rest is taken care of. And there is a text in the Gita where Krishna speaks about what he thinks. He says, someone who's on the right path may have some faults and make mistakes, but I consider him a saint because he's rightly situated. He's moving on. So this idea of perfectionism, which you might find from your education, or which you might somehow, I mean, our Western society is a lot about that. He who is more adept in doing something gets more money and more followers on Instagram. That is very much embedded in our culture, but on the spiritual path, that is not necessary, this view of life.
Mm. How was that?
Great, thank you.
Thanks, Claire.
Thank you.
Pleasure having you.
Be
relieved. Yeah, there's a lot of pressure in our spiritual life too, especially a tradition that has so many, it's almost like layers and layers of rules and etiquettes and how to dress and how to part your hair and how to put on your tealock and chant the mantra, right? It's like, it's an overwhelmingly international society of rules. So there. Yeah, and that sort of brings in our next question. I'm going to have David Charles Wilson come down. David? This is another part of our local family, now 6,000 miles away. David's from Philadelphia, but he's sort of part of our Super Soul community back home. How are you, Prabhu? Good to see you.
Hi, Krishna.
It's sort of like leading into your question, too, because there always is sort of a tension of, like, how can I do more? And we suffer from this feeling of, I'm not good enough. You want to share first how you got here, and I want you to talk right into the mic. I want you to see yourself in that little box, too.
Which little box?
That box right there. You're in, Mars. You're beautiful.
Okay. You won't hit the gong if I...
No, I won't hit the gong if you don't like the question.
Okay.
Tell your story how you got into bhakti first. And,
well, of course, you know, I owe a lot of it to you in that I was practicing transcendental meditation for many years. And starting to reach the phase of life where you lose things. Lose people, lose relationships, lose, you know, a life that you've built. And met you in Boston at one point and heard the story of Draupadi for the first time. And this idea of the personality of Godhead struck me, as opposed to this idea of chanting a mantra in my head to feel better. And you were welcoming and kind enough to invite me to the farm. And as things locked down in the world, the farm became one of the only places where people were gathering.
Don't get me in trouble here.
Oh, I hope not. We were all 6 feet apart. And it deepened my interest, my curiosity, and it built this affection for the community. And that kind of has crossed over into New York City, and subsequently to Philadelphia, where, you know, my world is about spending time and serving the devotees. And so I appreciate that. But as you both represent two of the most important teachers in my life, I wanted to, and this is strictly hypothetical, but the idea of about feeling unqualified comes up in this, you know, how does an aspiring student contend with feelings of inadequacy, lack of confidence, or unworthiness in their relationship with their teachers? And, you know, what if, Maharaj, if you have advice on how we can address these doubts we might feel as students.
Yeah, you can imagine that first Westerners who came in contact with Srila Prabhupada, who had come from India and who is deeply embedded in the spiritual tradition of Krishna consciousness, of Gaudiya Vaishnavism and all that, and who really embodied all these teachings. You can imagine how we felt in his presence. I still remember that one time when I was called into Prabhupada's room to give him a morning massage. He was an elderly person, and he took a massage each morning. And I remember when I stood before him, I felt so inadequate. I had also lied. I had said I'm an expert masseur. I had no idea of massaging. So I'm standing before him. My lie is spelled over my forehead. And I remember looking down left and right, and there were oceans of sweat on my shirt. I was so nervous. I had over sweating, over perspiration, I remember how Srila Prabhupada at that time looked upon me. He needed to calm me down first of all, and then he told me, well, do the massage like this. He could see that I had no idea. and he taught me how to massage. And then he said something where I felt he was accepting me with all my things, you know. He gave me four instructions. He said, a student should be four things. He should be, first of all, a good disciple, a learner. Then he himself should be a guru. He should teach what he has learned to others. And he should be helping. He should be kind to others by doing direct service for them. And finally, he should be a little independent. He should be able to he should not depend on others. So I watched my own spiritual master being very happy with the whole Sachinandan, at that time Sachinandan Brahmachari, and guiding him from where he was. I think genuine spiritual teachers can integrate mistakes and please help me with a difficult word, inequities. What is it when you are inequitable?
Inadequate.
Yeah, and what is the thing when you inequities?
Inadequacy.
Yeah, this word. they can deal with it, they can integrate it, and they don't become judgmental because of that. We should. What they don't like is pretense. That we try to give an image of ourselves that is not, because you can teach a person who is very inadequate, but you can't teach a pretender. So when the spiritual teacher sees us how we are, they can do what they wish to do, guide us forward. But when they see us trying to pretend, what can they do? You, what can you do for a person who suffers, but when you ask him, he says, I'm fine. You know, what can you do for him? Not much. Mm. In our material society, we have so much of I'm fine that people don't, they are not long in contact with themselves. And what can you do? Better is someone who's there. And see, sometimes we carry our concepts of life into the spiritual terrain, the spiritual arena. And in the material life, you always need to be so good or appear to be so good to be loved. In the spiritual life, you just need to be yourself, honest. And that's a different value system. I hope that answers your question to some degree of satisfaction.
Mm-hmm. That's a great answer. That's a great question. Perfect questions and perfect answers. There's always going to feel that have that feeling of inadequacy, isn't it? Right? It's normal for the student.
Yeah.
What do you do? Can I ask a question in that regard? There are people, perhaps due to some absentee parent or abandonment, that they never feel adequate, period, even if they are adequate. They never feel worth, even if they're trying their best to do worthy things. Have you come across students like that? There's just a deep self-loathing. How do you help a person like that? That even if you say, hey, you're doing wonderful, you're a great person, you're doing good, still they hear it all as, there's almost like demons shouting them down. Have you come across people like that? Yes. And then how do you help with the person who just cannot hear?
I had a guest who was an old man, 77 years old, or 78 perhaps, from Germany, coming to me. I knew him occasionally, on and off, and he came by our ashram and said, can I talk to you? I suffer with something. And I said, yes, I hope I can say something that is meaningful. And then he just came out and said, whatever I do, I feel I'm not good enough. And then he used that word, I suffer from self-loathing.
Loathing.
And he told me the extent of it. I recognized when he talked, the little voice in me who is doing the same thing. It's not as loud as his voice, but it is there. And you know what I did? After I have said, let us look objectively, move out of your mind and see, and we can see this, and I'm not just saying it to flatter you, but others have also seen this, and so on, you're doing good, and so on. Nothing worked, and then I just embraced him, like this.
Mm.
I kept him a little bit in the embrace.
A little longer,
and he started to cry, and then he said, thank you. Then I said, well, you need someone to embrace you from time to time. I'm not at the right. I'm so far, and I'm traveling. But maybe you should have friends who can can love you the way you are. No? Yes.
Thank you, Maharaj. Pleasure having you on the show. Thanks, everybody, joining us live. Tomorrow, we're back again with Maharaj, same time, which is 6 a.m. Eastern time, right, Mara?
Yep.
Thanks, everybody, for joining us early on Zoom, and thanks to everybody listening. If you have questions for future Q&A, you can do that, but tomorrow will be live. So live people here, write down a question, we'll bring you on live to have His Holiness Satchidananda Maharaj. We're really fortunate to have you. We know a lot of people want your time, Maharaj. We're really honored that you're here with us this weekend. Looking forward to many more. Yeah. Thanks, everybody.
Thank you. Thank you.
Thanks, everybody, joining us on Zoom, including Govinda Priya's here, Haribol. Surasani, little Maduria from Lebanon, Tim O'Reilly, Linda, Sherry Yannick from Oceanside, California, Nityananda Chandra, Haribol, Henry. Who else joined? Like, Dan Murphy's here, Bhakta Udi and family, Amrita Kishori, Louise, welcome to the show.
Okay.
And Krish Chaitanya and Don Kayla, Haribol. Thanks, everybody. Oh, let's get a look at everybody. We give a good wave, everybody. There you go. Uh-oh. What have I done? Did I blow it? Oh, there we go. Try that again, Mira. I will step back. Okay, look alive. Live. Thank you, everybody. Beautiful day. Bhagavad Prasadam ki. Shri Satchidananda Maharaj ki. Dhamma ki. Prabhupada ki.
Jai. Jai. Yeah. Haribol.
Thank you so much, Maharaj.
But really, what I try to explain, that paths appear while we walk them. Please be courageous to walk. Then you will find out beyond doubts. And then you're no longer haunted with the question, should I stay or should I go? <You know? laughs>